This is Dr. Patty Shelton, and you are listening to the LongevIQ podcast. We discuss anti-aging and longevity science and how to benefit from it so we can all live long, healthy, happy lives. Just before we get started, a quick medical disclaimer. This podcast is for informational purposes only. It is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease or to provide or replace medical advice. Please use this information to educate yourself as much as possible and share this information with a qualified health practitioner that you trust. In this episode, we'll take a look into the future. With all the advancement of longevity science and technology, could we live to be 200 years old, but still healthy and vibrant? And if so, what would our lives look like? For this episode, we're super excited to have with us Sergey Young, a visionary in the world of longevity innovation and the author of The Science and Technology of Growing Young. As we discuss, there are many promising technologies on the horizon, which could become available even in the next few years. In fact, we already have some remarkable devices that can help us to optimize our lifestyle and likely improve our health span. We have a lot more control than we realize. Also joining us today, as always, is Amir Ginsberg, the founder of LongevIQ. Thank you so much for being here, Sergey Young. It's really exciting to meet you. Thanks for coming.
Hello, everyone. I'm so excited to be here with you today.
Awesome. We were so excited to read your book. You have so much passion for all of this, the science and the longevity and what it's like for people to live long, healthy, happy lives. You present such a fascinating vision of the future, what it could be like to be 200 years old. So maybe for anyone who's not read your book yet, share that vision. What might it be like for someone to be 200 years old using all of this beautiful longevity technology?
200 years young. This is how I would call it. Just one thing before we go into the future. I'm obviously super positive about the future, but one would need to balance my genetically predefined high level of optimism with, you know, certain aspects of ethics, regulation, etc. In fact, my next book, my next big book, is going to be about the future of humans. And this is where it gets sometimes really controversial. So while I'm a technological optimist, we still need to sort out a lot of things on the ethical and moral front. So don't take it one-sided that, you know, this future is guaranteed or this future would not require our changes in society, ethics, and regulation. Okay, future. Imagine 50 years from now. Well, to reach 200 is going to be at least, 100 years from now. We need to redefine so many things in our life. Let's think about sleep first. And it's very likely that the definition of sleep will be completely redefined and the process of sleep as well. Think about Tesla, when for like 20 minutes, you can supercharge yourself. We'll have something which will be like, you know, super sleep for like 20 minutes, or you'll have an option to do like the old style classical overnight recharge for your body and mind. So that's kind of one thing. Second, we all know today that the environment where we sleep is extremely important. So this whole environment is going to be just redefined by technology, right? In terms of level of temperature, level of oxygen in the bedroom, our ability to block the light. So it's going to be much more technology driven overall. Then this important period of sleep is going to be used by so many devices and technology and pieces of science to help us live longer, healthier, and happier life. So I'm talking about nanorobots or nanobots, which is actually already in development. We've seen few great nanobot companies for our longevity vision fund. This is where we invest in different longevity technologies. They will be in your bloodstream, identifying different injuries, making repairs, deliver some nutrients, and do the scanning. So that's going to be part of your sleep, or while you're sleeping, it's going to work. And we already have an opportunity to use sensors, like for the beautiful audience that we have today who can see me. You know, I'm using Oura Ring to measure my sleep. Yeah, using Apple Watch, or I mean, you can use whatever devices and gadgets you want, wearables you want, as your personalized healthcare devices. But I think we're going to be full of sensors and diagnostic devices, right? because the name of the game will be to identify the first signs of disease as soon as possible. In terms of the food, this is a fascinating topic, and I'm not sure if all of us are ready for this message. Our food will be much more functional, probably synthetic, where all the nutrients and necessary elements are going to be integrated in this constructed food. I see the point in terms of where we will have enjoyment. What is the source for happiness? You know, rather than having a good meal with the friends, you know, I accept all of that. But I just got an interview with the team responsible for the pet food in one of the large companies. And I have seen actually fascinating statistics that when dogs switch to this more orchestrated synthetic food, the lifespan of the dogs increased by 40 to 70%. I'm not comparing ourselves with dogs, but I just want to provoke your thought that even if we think the food today should stay the same for the next 200 years, it might not be the same. And it's going to be a different world. It's going to be a world without genetic diseases. And as we know, like 30 to 40% of our longevity, depending on the study you look at, is defined by genetics. So while today we're really enjoying the stories of centenarians who basically been lucky in the genetic lottery, we're all going to be lucky. We're all going to be winners in genetic lottery. And I'm pretty sure our brain is going to be integrated with artificial intelligence and computing power, because I do think the name of the game in the future is combination of, you know, human intelligence and artificial intelligence. It's not conflicting. It's not either or. It's actually a combination of both. And this is where I see the development of this. And I actually find it really fascinating. Today, we know the term like Internet of Things. In the future, we'll have Internet of Bodies and Internet of Minds. And it's going to be completely different level of intelligence on the planetary level. It's going to be collective intelligence. While today, it's more like a metaphor relying on collective, you know, wisdom, collective history and work of so many generations. In the future, it's going to be instant. It's going to be run as a huge network. So we as humans are going to be in a completely different level, supported by artificial intelligence, but also because of this collective nature of the future intelligence, we're going to be in a completely different level of development as a species, both within our planet, but also some places outside our planet. So that's the story of the future.
Do you think that there's any limit to human lifespan? You mentioned 200 years, but yeah. 200 years young, as though that's not the end necessarily. So just based on what you've seen of the research so far, and of course, we may not know this yet.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, that's a great question. Look, I'm not a scientist, right? So I have 3 degrees, chemical engineering, banking and finance, and business administration. So take it with certain skepticism. But if you ask me, as someone who spent 5 years investing in longevity technologies and digital healthcare, I do think in current biological form, it's going to be very difficult for us to live beyond 120 to 150 years. So it's not going to work beyond this limit. To live longer than that, we would need to redefine what human body and mind mean. And I'm talking about human augmentation. We can use the metaphor of the old car, right? When for the old car, you replace the engine, you replace certain parts, and the same going to happen with our body. So it's going to be integration of man and machine and some biological material and engineering material as well. Don't be scared. It's really far away from today. So it's just food for thoughts and trying to change the ethics and social nature of today's world. But we just need to be aware of that. One other thing which I actually find very interesting to think about. So when people talk about immortality, so people like, you know, Sergey, you're promoting immortality. I'm actually not promoting immortality, because my definition of our longer living in the future will be like points in time in your life when you would need to decide whether you're going to be immortal or not. It's very likely to be like every 5 to 10 years, you would need to decide whether you're taking the next layer of what is available today through science and technology to extend your life, healthy lifespan for another 5 to 10 years. So it's going to be a series of your own decisions to extend your life or not. But obviously, we need to work a lot on that front, because in some of the cultures and some of the religions, if you decide not to extend your life, this will be considered like a suicide. But again, it's a philosophical question, and it's not going to be me or one or two people to find the solution. Very likely, it's require a lot of collective work to find the reasonable ground for this model of life extension.
So fascinating and so interesting. You hear people talking about increasing human lifespan, but we don't think about like what it means to be human might actually not kind of be the same if we do that as we
I agree.
That.
I think it was a couple of years ago, I've done a TEDx called Morality of Immortality. And the main thing is we just created technologies to extend our life, but we haven't created life that we want to extend. In majority of polls, you know, 80% of people, they don't want to extend their own lifespan. And even if you focus the question on the health span, it's going to be more people who would not choose this option than the people who would be like pro-life extension. And that's a serious problem. Actually, the longer we go through different horizons of longevity innovations, the way it's defined in the book, the more ethics, social dilemmas, regulation would play a role. In fact, again, I just want to be provocative today for our smart audience, and everyone can think about, you know, implication of these technologies for our life. I think we're going to be ready for very radical life extension and health span extension in 10, 20 years from now, from science and technology points of view, but we're not going to be ready from human ethics and regulation. It's going to be the main barriers actually to embrace and use these technologies.
In a way, that's a very sad situation. If 80% of people think it's not even worth bothering to live longer on this planet, that's like a huge problem.
It is, yeah. But look, I just need to focus, right? So in a way, I'm an investor and supporting different technologies, which would today bring a lot of relief and improvement to the current healthcare system. And then hopefully all of us can sort out the ethical and social things in the next 10, 20 years collectively, starting today, not delaying this. And I'm so happy that the things that we invest in bring 10, 20, not percent, but times improvement in terms of the cost or efficiency against the current state of interventions. Like we invested in a company, it's called Lygenesis. They do organ regeneration. They actually use our lymph nodes to regrow liver and help people with terminal liver diseases. They started human trial. They just got FDA approval a year ago to help people with terminal liver disease to survive and improve the quality of their life. So their solution for liver transportation is 20 to 30 times cheaper than when you use the donor liver for transportation. Like they would use one donor liver to help 50 to 75 people. So it's not going to be $800,000 like it's today in the US, and you need to wait for 6 to 12 months for the donor organ. It's going to be instant. And, you know, it's going to be $20,000 to $30,000 per surgery. Or we invested in the company who do early cancer diagnostics, similar to Grail. It's called the name of the company called Freenom. They will have the marketable product pretty soon. They use liquid biopsy, our blood actually, to identify many types of cancer at early stage. If you look at the potential cost of this early cancer diagnostic toolkit, well, it's $200-$300. Even like colonoscopy for prostate cancer and colon cancer, you know, would cost 10 times more. And I can go on and on with all of these 20 companies that we have in our portfolio or in portfolios of investors that I know. And my dream for healthcare to be very science and tech based and to be part of universal basic income or universal basic services. I think for many countries in the world, in 20 to 30 years from now, it's going to be completely economically affordable to offer this as a basic service to their citizen. But again, I'm a dreamer. I'm super optimist. So, you know, I'm okay if you are pessimistic about what I'm promising about the future.
This is fascinating. What a fascinating thing to think about. And you're starting to sort of pull it towards, you know, we went dreaming way far into the future and then maybe just a few years from now. I think what a lot of people really want to know is what's available right now. What can I actually use right now?
So the disappointing discovery that many of us made about today's situation is that your health span and life extension options are still pretty much focused on lifestyle interventions. Okay. You know, obviously, would I like to surprise you with something high tech, which would help you immediately. Yes, but as a reliable person, I will not be able to do it with you today. So it's a lot about lifestyle changes. And then we're talking about physical exercises, sleep, diet changes, passive longevity, as they call it, which is basically avoiding smoking or not taking unnecessary risk. But there are a number of science-based and tech components which are available today. And this is extremely important. I would think about two things. So one is the medical screening. What is happening in the medical screening space is really amazing. So if you think about today's full body MRI, if you do it on 3 Tesla MRI device, it actually has pretty advanced AI system, which would be able to, well, let's look at comparisons. So human radiologists working under time pressure, and this unfortunately is a reality for doctors and our healthcare today, would be able to discover early stage breast cancer just by looking through your scan in 36% of cases, because it's early stage, right? So it's just really difficult for the human eye to catch it. Same scan, combination of artificial intelligence and radiologists, 94% early stage cancer discovery. And it's a huge difference. And we all know that even where we are today in terms of technology and healthcare, early stage cancer, for majority of cancer types, if you identify that really early stage, the recovery rates are from 90 to 100%. So that's great. And then late stage cancer, stage 4, is 10, 25% recovery. So it's a huge difference in terms of quality of your life and the length of your life. So what I always say, the most important day of your life every year is the day of your medical screening, not your birthday. And you could imagine, I'm not a doctor. I saved so many lives just basically pushing people to the medical screen. And it's all the same story. You call me up, say, Sergey, you saved my life. You know, it was early stage cancer. I'm fully treated, recovered. The quality of my life is the same. Thank you very much. I can spend this time with my loved ones more years on up. So that's kind of one thing, which is pretty unusual and new for us, even for our generation. The second piece is actually what we call today wearables. I call them personalized healthcare devices. And we have fascinating things today, like Oura Ring, which would, you know, help me to establish the feedback loop with my deep sleep or REM sleep. So when I started to use Oura Ring, I think my deep sleep numbers were like 40 to 50 minutes a night. Right now, I'm in 2.5, 3 hours territory. And again, I mean, Oura Ring will not help you to sleep better, but just knowing every morning what you've done day before, or what was the condition for your sleep, or the length of your sleep, and how it's affected your sleep, it's just a powerful feedback. And this is the importance of that. Like, I am not pre-diabetic in terms of my condition, though I'm 51 and I need to watch that. But I like probably for 2 weeks every quarter, I use the continuous glucose monitor. And it's amazing when you can establish the connection between the food or the drink that you just had with your glucose spike or reaction of your body to glucose. I find so many different and interesting things about relations. So I thought I shouldn't eat pasta. Now I eat pasta because I'm actually pretty cool in terms of reaction to that. And I'm a big fan of ice cream. For the last 4 years, I haven't really allowed myself to eat ice cream. But what I discovered, if I start with a salad and then have some proteins, a little bit of ice cream in the end of the meal is actually fine. My glucose level is kind of almost the same. There's no spike there. So I made a few great discoveries. And I'm fascinated what is happening with our, you know, watch or wearables. I'm going to use Apple Watch as an example, but feel free to use whatever you want. Samsung Watch, Whoop, Garmin. It is already a very powerful device. So it can detect 5 different types of heart irregularities. A doctor that I know use it, like if he's called on the plane to help a passenger, he just use it for electrocardiogram, the Apple Watch from his hand. Or it can actually detect if you kind of fell down on the street, if you haven't pushed the combination of bottoms within the minute, it's going to call the ambulance for you. And I can go on and on. If you look at the Apple strategy in the field of healthcare, and I'm pretty sure this kind of strategy is on the top of the minds of people who run tech companies. This is great and we need to use it. So it's not counting your 10,000 steps anymore. It's actually your personalized healthcare device.
And so all of these wearables, the power of them, it sounds like a lot of the power of them actually lies in how they help you optimize your lifestyle for your personal biology.
I agree with you. And it's, buddy, I think that this whole notion of personalization is so underestimated today. I mean, they even created like a drug for a girl and it was drug for her. And we're thinking about the medicine and healthcare today with the limitation of human brain and human intelligence. But what's going to happen? Artificial intelligence is going to help to personalize so many things for us. And obviously, the efficiency of the next generation of healthcare is going to be completely different because it's going to be tailored for us. Remember my story about glucose monitor and, you know, in fact, that actually pasta and ice cream are allowed for my diet. It's not really damaging for my health. This is just a really small example of how the personalized medicine and healthcare will look in the future. But I actually wanted to mention the importance of lifestyle changes as well. So we are kind of skeptical on, you know, on a general level, like, okay, well, Sergey, my mom told me that diet, exercise, and sleep. But think about this. I think it was in the book of Dr. Kara Fitzgerald, The Younger You, and she described the study that they've done. They've been able to decrease the biological age, which means make people younger, by 3.2 years, like let's say 3 years younger in the course of 8 weeks. And you know what are the miracle tools that they use? Sleep, diet, exercise. That's it. 8 weeks, you can be 3 years younger. And this is amazing. And if you put like wearables and medical screening on top of that, this is amazing.
That is amazing. And already here, it's not a dream in the future. It's already true. What about supplements? I know some people feel really overwhelmed by all the options that are out there. So how do people know what's going to move the needle? What's really actually worth investing in?
That's a great question. And I have my own waves, like in terms of the diet, sometimes like really strict diet wise, sometimes I'm kind of more relaxed because it's really difficult. You know, I'm doing this for the last probably 5 to 6 years, and it's really difficult to stay on a strict regimen all the time. So I went through these similar waves on the supplements. If you speak to 2 years younger version of me, which is 2 years ago, you know, I was doing like probably 30 supplements a day, 30 different types of supplement. And I would take them morning, afternoon, and the evening just to distribute this heavy load. Today, I'm more relaxed on that. And I'm actually looking at two groups of supplements personally. And this is what I'm taking. One is basic supplements, which proven to be really helpful for our longevity and health. Very classical things like omega-3. I have genetically predefined pretty high level of cholesterol, and I'm not on statins because my whole health story started with me rejecting the idea of taking statins for every day of my life or another. At this time, I thought another 40 years. Right now, you know, I'm thinking about 150. But omega-3 was really helpful for me to decrease the level of cholesterol. I'm not giving everyone's advice. I mean, your doctor would need to define what is good for you. But frankly speaking, combination of fiber and omega-3 does probably the same job for me in terms of decreasing my cholesterol level in combination with my dietary choices than, you know, in comparison to statins. So omega-3, vitamin D, I think is important. We all deficient of vitamin D because we are always under the roof, whether it's your car or your home, your office. There are very few of us who actually, you know, have the beauty and enjoyment in our life to spend so many hours outdoors every day. So yeah, I'm measuring my vitamin D level every quarter. I'm actually measuring a lot every quarter and adjusting my vitamin D intake. And I actually think it's great. Occasionally, like once a year, I would look at the different vitamin B panel because they are extremely important. And sometimes I discover that I'm deficient of a particular vitamin B type. So I'm taking this as well. So that's kind of first group, which is classical, old school, available in every pharmacy for you. Second, what has happened in the last 5 years is arrival of these longevity supplements. Okay. So right now you can go to CVS or Walgreens or Boots and actually find particular supplements, which are, if you look at certain studies, are really helping you to live longer, or we believe they're helping us to live longer. So the one that I'm taking is NMN. Funny enough, I think it's in the US right now. NMN is, from regulatory perspective, moving from non-regulated space to regulated space. But you know, so far so good. What I purchased before that change is enough for me for the next 6 months. And we've invested in some of the companies within our portfolio, which actually use NMN for fertility. They do it for dogs and horses simply because it's, from regulatory perspective, it's just much easier to test it with animals, and they achieve amazing results. So I'm not talking about humans here. But again, NMN, the only thing to consider about supplements, it's just a lot of placebo effect, both for drugs and supplements that we have. And I'm typical placebo guy. So like, if you believe it's working for you, your body and your mind will respond to that. So placebo effect is probably like 30 to 40%. I don't know how many people in our audience know. So there's a number of like placebo pharmacies in the world. They probably, all of them are now online. So you actually buy, you know that this is placebo. There is no chemical substance against that on that disease. And the funny thing of placebo is, even if you know that this is placebo, but you believe in that, it still works for you. But again, 30 to 40%, I'm cool with that outcome, and it's not going to work for everyone. I'm optimist, and I'm also optimist about placebo pills as well.
That's such a great way of looking at the placebo effect, because sometimes people dismiss it like, oh, it's just placebo. But really, actually, that's kind of proof that the mind and the body are powerful, and that your mind has a huge impact on your body.
Agree. And there's what was the name of this part of the book? I think it's called Think and Grow Young, in my biggest book called The Science and Technology of Growing Young. So Think and Grow Young covers the topic of psychological aspect of aging. And again, I'm a great believer in that. In fact, my story in working in longevity, and I started with solving my own personal health problem, and then it's quickly extended to the mission to help as many people as possible to be a healthy and happy version of themselves all around the world. I started with like daily mantra in the morning. I want to live 200 years, which is completely irresponsible and not possible given where we are today in terms of science and technology. So I want to live 200 years in the body of 25 years old man, young man. And you know what? I've done it for the first month, and I couldn't really believe, but the way my body respond to that, you know, I actually become younger in terms of my appearance, but also in terms of my emotional drive. It's almost like traveling back in time when I was a young boy, you know, running, smiling, enjoying the life. So do this little experiment. Think about yourself as a younger version of yourself. Your target psychological age should be like aggressively low, and see how your body responds to that. My guess is for at least for the half of the population, it will actually help you to redefine your life and become a little bit younger.
This is a fantastic message. Absolutely. Let's also think kind of beyond the everyday. So some people might go to a longevity clinic, let's say once a year, or sometimes a little more. So what's available now, or what's coming very, very soon in those kinds of clinics, if someone was thinking about investing in that?
Yeah, so my horizon for the upcoming innovation is actually 5-10 years from now, because I'm an investor. So the typical investment period is anywhere between 3 to 7 years, and it's sometimes much closer to 7 than to 3. This is the main part of the book. This is what I call a new horizon of longevity innovations. And when people ask me what are the most exciting things which are happening there, I'm always talking about three things. One is gene editing and gene therapy. And again, we will be able to become all winners in genetic lottery. We will be able to help people with rare genetic diseases. Even this orphan, it's called orphan diseases, like rare diseases. Well, we call them rare. There are 300 million people on earth who are suffering from this disease. So they're not that rare. We're gonna obviously help our longevity genes to manifest themselves. And this, I guess, just probably at least 5 to 10 years to our healthy lifespan. So that's one thing, gene editing, gene therapy. Second is organ regeneration. And we did discuss that. It sounds a little bit ridiculous today, but I think the level of augmentation and organ regeneration and organ replacement opportunities in this field that we're going to see in the next 5 to 10 years is going to be amazing. It's going to be a lot of progress into that. And it's not only internal organs. And the third one is longevity and appeal. If you go to the pharmacy today and you ask for something against aging, they will think you're crazy, or they will send you to cosmetics or supplements. And I don't think it's the way it should be, right? We all know that after aging process starts in your body, which is usually happening after you turn 40 to 45, your chances, statistical chances to get age-related diseases and finally die from them, cancer, heart disease, diabetes, neurodegenerative diseases, are increasing exponentially, 20, 50 times. So we obviously much better looking something which would slow down or even reversing aging processes inside your body. So I do think in 5 to 10 years from now, we're going to have longevity and appeal. We're going to see completely different category of drugs which would actually help us to find aging. And it's easily can be drugs that we know today which are going to be repurposed, like metformin or rapamycin, or it can be drug developed with the help of artificial intelligence. Like, we have two companies in our portfolio, in LVF, in Longevity Vision Fund, which use artificial intelligence for drug discovery for the first part of it. So the first stage of drug discovery, which is usually 2 years, and I'm oversimplifying this for this discussion. So they've been able to engage artificial intelligence and compress this part of drug discovery cycle from 2 years to 2 months. And this is amazing. Think about drug development process today in the US. It's at least $2.6 billion for every drug and 12 years. And this is just an example. What if you can compress it from 12 years to 10? How much capital you can kind of free up and decrease the cost of drug development? And this is just the beginning. These companies work on solution across the whole drug development cycle, not only the initial stage of it. So longevity and appeal is going to be the norm in the future. It's going to be here in 5 to 10 years. And again, it's probably going to be some old drugs and some new drugs developed.
And what about some of the technologies we have that maybe they aren't kind of super mainstream yet, but they're out there? Stem cells, cryotherapy, red light therapy, things like that. How do you feel about where those are at now? Do you feel like they're worth investing in? Do you feel like maybe soon they will be?
Yeah, I actually think that series of mini shocks makes us stronger rather than weaker. So in terms of like infrared or cryo, you know, I've tried so many times, I've done it. I kind of like it, but I don't think that it's going to radically change our ability to live much, much longer. Okay, so that's on that front. I think stem cells overall is extremely powerful avenue. Personally, I'm like super conservative guy when it's related to human health, because, you know, when I'm investing, we're always looking at the benefit and risk associated. So from my personal perspective, I've been offered to go through stem cells procedure many times all around the world. I always said no. I just want to see a little bit more trials and a little bit more evidence for particular cases where it's going to be safe to use it and for what particular indications. So from my personal perspective, if you have something really terminal and it's a question of life and death for you, I would probably speak to your doctor and have a blessing to use this therapy. But I'm 51, have another 5 to 10 years to wait, you know, just sit and wait. What's going to happen in this field?
That's a really good message. Just really thinking through what you're considering, not just jumping into the optimistic view.
Yeah.
What about mistakes that you see people making? You hear from a lot of people about their longevity journeys and things.
Yeah.
What do people maybe sometimes get wrong commonly?
Well, look, we all a product of the society and our healthcare system. And it's just a lot of embedded beliefs that sometimes are limiting us from just being healthier and happier version of ourselves. Examples. Number one, think about this. We delegated all our health choices to other parties. So it is doctors, insurance companies, big pharma, big food, government. They all decide, make your kind of health related decisions. Obviously, I'm not arguing that we all just need to become a doctor, but just being a sensible part of this group making this collective decision. You need to be in a driving seat. And if you have some doubts, specifically, I'm always telling people, like, if you have something coming out, like a huge surgery recommendation, right? Or really radical intervention in your health, ask for second or third opinion. It's always great to see more balanced perspective. Because think about this. When we speak with the medicine and healthcare system and with doctors today, we have all the beauty, but all the limitation of human intelligence. You're always carrying the risk of someone just had an experience with their own sample of the patients through the years. And what if your situation is really different on like a personal basis from the statistical sample that this particular person had? So in the future, and some of it, like, you know, the 3 Tesla MRI device that I mentioned, it's a combination of AI, which is trained on 100,000 samples, and human intelligence and human doctor is going to be the way for the future. So I actually believe that we really need to take back control of our health and orchestrate everything which is happening around us in the system. Again, you know, not to make the final decision, but be part of it. So that's one. Second, there are a number of solutions which exist today, and majority of them are looking at symptoms rather than the origins of the disease. And I'm not really going into extremes now. I'm not saying you should not take medication. And I'm not saying in opposite, like every time you should take medication. Let's go through my example. For the last 2 weeks, I had extremely high blood pressure. And it's obviously it's a major risk factor for heart disease, right? And, you know, if you see the doctor, they would tell you, well, Sergey, this is blood pressure management medication. It's going to reduce your blood pressure. And that's basically take it for the rest of your life. But apparently what has happened, I do like a bit of weight training. So there was something related to my spine and my muscle work, which actually limit the outflow of the blood from my head. And it's affected in a negative way my blood pressure. A few visits to doctor fixing that helped me to reduce this blood pressure. But like in a normal condition, think about if this would happen to you or your neighbor next door, they would just continue to take this blood pressure medication for decades. And this is the norm of the system. To protect the risk, doctors would need to work on the standard protocols, and standard protocols should work for everyone, which is not always the case. So think not about symptoms, but think about the origin of your diseases and if some of them are really fixable and changeable on your level. I think the current paradigm of healthcare is like everything, your recovery should be supported from the outside. While I think our body has certain self-healing capabilities, again, I'm not going to the extreme saying like, don't take any drugs, just pray, meditate, eat plant-based diet, and you're going to be healthy. No, but combination of classical medicine, but also relying on the capabilities of your body to recover. This is Mother Nature embedded immune system. We can go into details of that. I think it's extremely important to rely on that. And it's specifically the case for developed markets and the US as well. I think we are not looking at food as something which can be our remedy or can be our poison as well. We're underestimating the importance of food as an important lifestyle factor for our longevity. And finally, every time we talk about health, in 80% of cases, by default, we're talking about physical health, while mental health is extremely important too. And I know a lot of people in longevity sector who actually think the mental health is actually your determinant of the physical health as well. Again, not going to the extremes. So I think we're just underestimating and neglecting the connection between our mind and body. And that's an important thing to realize.
And you talked about how powerful it was for you, who's already a very optimistic person, to like focus even more on optimism.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
I want to give Amir a chance to ask questions. I've seen him over there and, like, thinking and being very patient.
I don't know if you see me smiling.
Yes.
I am so happy we just mentioned the mental health, because it's one of the most overlooked factors, especially in the longevity space. And you gave a really a beautiful example of how changing the mindset with a simple mantra made a big difference for you. So maybe we could talk just a bit more about your experience with the mental, emotional part of this, the mindset, the longevity mindset, if you will.
Yeah, let's talk about. Thanks for this question, Amir. Remember, I'm chemical engineer by degree. So I'm always trying to be like fact-based, technology-based, science-based as well. And I think this side of our life and our health is still underdiscovered and still underinvestigated in a way, because simply the natural focus was on the physical aspects of our health, not the mental one. So that's one. Second, you think about this, for many decades, we've been fighting with the longevity barriers that we have around when we turn 50 to 60, which is cancer and heart disease. And there were not so many people who were living through to turning 70 or 80 or even 90. This is where you face the next wave, the next barrier, which is neurodegenerative space. So naturally, through the history of humanity and evolution of healthcare, they were more focused on physical aspects and physical barriers like cancer, heart disease, diabetes, rather than neurodegenerative space. And this is why it's extremely important to even like overinvest our time and our focus and resources into understanding that. So I'm not that knowledgeable into this field, but I can tell you what am I doing. So one thing, I think sleep is extremely important for your hormonal health and therefore your mental health overall. Majority of us have sleep deprivation on different dimensions. And I think what took it for me to change all of this is two things. One is the book by Matthew Walker, Why We Sleep. Before that, I was just using my sleep hours as the endless credit to sleep less and do more in real life. It was completely normal for me to sleep 5.5 hours every night and then surviving on coffee and my embedded level of energy. After reading this book, my rule is 8 hours in the bed, which is 7 hours of sleep. And I'm sticking to that. It's an extremely important rule in my life. I obviously know a lot of founders and doctors in longevity clinics around the world. And there's an amazing guy, Jack Randall, in London. So I remember we had a lunch with him and I saw him like first time. And I'm, Jack, so you have this beautiful longevity and health optimization clinic. Tell me one thing, which is the most important. And this is, we typical humans, we like one thing, while human biology would not ever support one thing. You know, it's always the complexity of the human biology that you need to address on so many dimensions. But, you know, as a weak human, I'm like, tell me one thing. And I remember his answer was, Sergey, every night we can visit the most powerful clinic in the world. We go to bed and we sleep. And I thought, what an amazing way to underline the importance of sleep. I can tell you as a, you know, responsible biohacker or longevity guy who invests in longevity and affordable longevity for so many people, to recreate the effect of 8 hours high quality sleep by alternative means like supplements, physical exercises, diet, you would need to spend like, I don't know, 2-3 hours a day. And it's not really even possible to just recreate it by different means. But then you sleep and your body has this natural regulation system in terms of hormonal and all other aspects of health. So that's just extremely important. So that's number one. Second, meditation worked in a big way for me. And I'm the type of guy, because I'm very like tech driven. And so I actually think 25 to 50% of people would need to excuse like a gadget to start certain changes in your daily routine. So it took me Muse, you know, this device, which actually helps you to meditate, to start meditating. But then I quickly realized in like 3 months that human being would not really need any gadget to meditate, right? It's just like put yourself in the silence and you close the room and then you meditate. But meditation made a huge impact on me. I also tried the tech version of meditation called neurofeedback. This is what Dave Asprey does in his program called 40 Years of Zen. There are a number of neurofeedback clinics all around the world. The one I've done in London, it's been amazing. It was the impact of, you know, like if I were doing Vipassana, which is silence meditation for the week or so. And it's very powerful tool. But again, like you don't need to buy this neurofeedback sessions. You know, you can just sit down and meditate and it's extremely important for your balance. And third thing is just be a good person. Think about the religious or spiritual reason or people with mission that you met in your life. They look younger, they radiate, they're more happy. And I think the definition of success and the importance of money that we have in the current society is obviously overrated. Sometimes it just doesn't have anything related to your level of happiness. So be a kind person, give more than you take, think about other people, and you're going to be happier, healthier, and you're going to live longer.
Yes. Wow. What an amazing message.
What a powerful message. Kindness and be a good person. And funny as it is, this is probably what's going to lead to long, healthy life.
Absolutely.
Yeah, people tend to get so individually focused. When we're thinking about longevity, people just really, like, it's all about me, it's all about myself. But as you're sharing, like, we can't really separate ourselves from what's around us, and focusing on other people actually helps us too.
Absolutely.
Do you have any more questions, Amir?
One question, although this was the absolute perfect message to wrap this, but we mentioned neurodegenerative disease. Do you see any big breakthrough with that area? Because obviously, if we don't have our brain with us, then there's really no point of anything else.
Yeah, I agree. Amir, I think we are at a really early stage of trying to understand that. And I think the science and technology sectors have a right focus in terms of just basically having more data to analyze that, you know, better scanning, better AI to interpret this. And this is what will lead to big inventions and big discoveries. But we're at early stage, but again, the technology is so promising. What I've heard, again, neurodegenerative diseases, there's no critical mass of science and technology in this field that makes it investable for us, right? But if you believe that first signs of Alzheimer started in the age of 40 to 45, like literally 30 to 40 years before it manifests itself, that's a long feedback cycle. Remember, you know, I was talking about the importance of establishing the feedback cycle. So I do think we are at extremely early stage today, but we have a right focus in terms of the academic community and entrepreneurial community, just trying to analyze this whole thing, have enough data, and then combination of human talent and artificial intelligence will help us to arrive to important conclusions in the next 5 years.
Fantastic. A lot of us have lost family members in that way, the sort of slow fade out, and it's so difficult. So we hope that can get solved. We usually like to end with just kind of your top tips, maybe talk a little bit about what you do for longevity and what your top tips would be for people to focus on, like the main points that they can keep in mind.
Okay. Five things. It's not a lot of surprises. We covered some of them. And by the way, so I'll talk about five things, but there is more in the book. In fact, the biggest chapter in the book, actually called Who Wants to Live Forever, about 10 longevity choices. So people might want to refer to this too. So five things. One is medical screening. We discussed that. And when I have 30 seconds and time for one tip only, I mentioned that. I think it's extremely important. My medical screening actually in 23rd, like in 10 days from now in San Diego in Human Longevity Center. So for me, it's extremely important. Second is passive longevity. Don't do stupid things, right? Smoking. At a certain point of time, I was thinking about if I should even mention smoking at all because it's outdated. It's not fashionable anymore. No, it's not. 25% plus of the younger generation up to 30 years still smoking certain kinds of electronic or classical cigarettes, using seatbelts plus 2 years to your life, not driving motorcycle. Like, you know, all of these relatively simple things save a lot of years and take out a lot of risk from your life. Third is a diet. There's a lot of disagreement in the academic community diet-wise, which will extend your lifespan and health span. But there's one agreement: decreasing your caloric intake, decreasing the number of calories that you take every day by 15 to 25%, very likely will add another 2 to 5 healthy years to your life. So that's, I think, is extremely important. Taking out all this unnecessary sugar from your diet. I'm a big fan of fasting. So I'm like fasting 36 hours every week, usually Monday evening to Wednesday morning. And I love this impact of fasting on me. But, you know, obviously, one would need to design for himself or herself what is the fasting or intermittent fasting regime that they want to use. Fourth is physical exercise. And we have this binary, like, extremes when we think about physical exercise. For some of us, oh, I just need to run a marathon. Or the other extreme is like, I don't have time for that, for the big sport. I'll just sit down and watch football on TV. Well, there's something in between. You don't need to go into extremes. 10,000 steps a day, you know, I think just amazing target. And then if you can put something on top of it, like stretching or yoga, you know, weightlifting, which is extremely important at the age of 50 for your bone density and protecting your skeleton, cardio, at least 90 minutes a week, very important. And number five, and the last one, this is what I call the peace of mind. We just discussed that. Sleep, meditation, and being a good person, enjoying your life.
I see Amir like just saying, yep, I agree. This is perfect.
No, it's a really powerful message. And we're so happy and grateful to you, Sergey, for mentioning this. It seems like right now prevention through lifestyle is huge. And more people need to hear this message. Just do one more thing, just one little thing, and just be strong when temptation occurs or however you want to look into it. It's okay that life throws you here and there, but the more we hear this and share this information with each other, the more we realize the norm actually needs to be redefined, right? To a better, healthier norm.
We have a lot of power. We have so much ability to control how we age and how we feel on a daily basis.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Sergey. Oh, we're so happy to have you here. And it's nice to see someone so smiling and positive. So thank you for sharing that enthusiasm, that energy with our audience. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for your time today. Remember, it's time to take back control for our health. All of us need to be in the driving seat. And please be healthy and happy.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.